In recognition of the deep history and culture of this island, we would like to acknowledge and pay our respects to all Tasmanian Aboriginal people, the traditional owners of the land upon which we meet and gather.
This is The Little Black Dress of Women's Health, presented by WEN.
So, welcome to the second episode of The Little Black Dress. We're really excited to do this new podcast because it's on menopause and it's on the effect on the brain and how much it can affect women and how confusing it can be. And in saying that, it is 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and we are all out of words, including our producer who was struggling to speak to us just before. And he's going to learn so much more about women's health again today. I am Peter and I am the founder and CEO of WEN, and I am lucky to be joined with one of our most very senior nurses, Katie, who has a variety of hats which she wears, and her clinical skills and educational skills are phenomenal.
Wow, thank you for that introduction.
I'd like to welcome her. The other thing is we have been friends for a very long time and we are going through menopause or perimenopause together.
Yes.
So this is why this podcast is so important to us.
Yes, definitely.
We're doing it through WEN, which WEN is Women's Health Education Network. We are a non-for-profit who is run by medical professionals based in Hobart, although we are national. Our medical director is in Western Australia and half of our board is in Queensland and Melbourne. So WEN basically is here for all women.
Yes.
Non-binary people and trans people.
Transgender, yes.
Yep. And we are talking about issues that affect women or non-binary people or trans people who were assigned female at birth.
Yep. And you're wanting to put out information that's available to everybody.
And that is very much evidence-based.
Yes, absolutely.
So a lot of it is practical.
Yes.
And we always, always, always look at the community that we're talking to and we try and get them to develop or deliver some of the content.
Yes.
So the thing we want to talk about, we are both perimenopausal.
Yes, we are. Yep.
And so this is something that we have been researching and we have learnt a lot about it. We're a bit shocked about some of the stuff that we learned. Even just before we came in here, we found out a few new things and we were like, oh my goodness, how did we not know this? As women, why weren't we taught this?
Yep, absolutely.
There's a group of us who are going through perimenopause together, and funnily enough, our other friend, who is usually the least proactive in this sort of stuff like contraception and all this sort of stuff, was the one who pushed both of us to get our perimenopausal sorted. So the thing that we really wanted to talk about today is the impact on mental health.
Yes.
So we may lose a few words here, but, you know, that's part of what we're going through. Can we discuss that you've got another condition that was mimicking a lot of your signs?
Yeah, absolutely. And, So I went into this having a chronic health condition, which I think makes it a bit more challenging sometimes because I put a lot of things down to my arthritis and say, oh, it's related to that. You know, a lot of my symptoms I think I put down to that and a busy life and parenting and working. So, yeah, it came, I think, as a bit of a surprise to me that some of those symptoms were related and were perimenopausal symptoms, not just my arthritis. Yeah.
And I suppose one of the big things that I have been reflecting on. So if you look at all the movies from the 90s and early 2000s, that when they show a woman, like I always remember Fried Green Tomatoes. Do you remember that? Did you ever see that?
Yes, yep.
Do you remember that
scene where the woman
was really angry and the girl in the pink punch buggy stole her car park? And so she rammed her car into it repetitively and moved her out of the car spot. The young woman said, what are you doing? And she goes, I've got better insurance. And that was rage. That was menopausal rage. But a lot of the stuff that is portrayed via Hollywood or the media is that menopause is hot flushes, crying, being upset that you can't reproduce anymore. So when I started coming into it, I wasn't I felt the rage. We know I felt the rage, but which we'll get on to in a second.
There was rage, yes.
But those were the things. I wasn't teary. I wasn't having any hot flushes. And I would, you know, like I finished with my babies. My babies are 10 and 12. God, what would I do with the baby now? So when I was having all these other symptoms, I was like, well, that's not what it's supposed to be like because the television or media is playing something else.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I think there's a lot of cultural awareness around, or lack of awareness around, what actual symptoms can occur. Yeah, and I certainly think we've very much learnt that. And I was even very surprised chatting to my doctor, and she gave me a list of symptoms, and a lot of them I wouldn't have ever thought were related to menopause or perimenopause period. So I think that's, yeah, is a massive, massive difference for us.
And I suppose there are two things. There are lots of things, but one of the things is women are living so much longer.
Yeah.
With, you know, mortality rates from an age thing. We're living to, you know, 80s and 90s now, which is probably the first time that this has happened on a larger scale. Yeah. You know, you've always had some people live longer. And the other thing is that more women are working.
Yes.
At an older age.
Absolutely.
And so these symptoms are really, really impacting women in ways that, once we started doing some research, because it did impact me, but once we started doing some research, I was actually horrified and shocked on some of the stuff that we found out.
Yeah, and I was very surprised that article that you sent me from the Investment magazine about managing the toll of menopause, how the stats on it, you know, and 2 million women in Australia each year go through menopause and another 80,000 are perimenopausal. So you've got a massive group of people going through it. And a lot of them are retiring earlier because of their symptoms, because of the brain fog, because of the mental health issues that they have around it. And I was really surprised by that, and particularly around the statistic from 2020 about women in the 40 to 49 age group being high suicidal rate, and a lot of it are based around issues they were having with that. So to me, that was really shocking, I guess. You know, you feel like you're in your own little world with it a bit. And certainly when I started talking to friends and family about what I was going through, I was amazed at how many other people were having similar symptoms and hadn't put it down to that, or had gone on their own journey of trying to get symptoms sorted, but just not talking about it. It wasn't something commonly that we were discussing.
I do think that it is a taboo subject, which I was really shocked at, because I didn't think it would be, but nothing is a taboo subject at WEN, because we talk about everything.
Yeah.
But when I'm talking about it, because I'm really open about the fact I'm perimenopausal, there are so many women who are like, oh, I don't, you know, no, I'm not menopausal. I don't have any symptoms. And I think if you had diabetes, would we be shying away from this or not asking for treatment or not asking for help? It is still something that is a medical condition that is affecting women.
That every single woman is going to go through at some stage. Absolutely. And I think it too potentially is just one of those things that just expectation that women will go through it, and you don't necessarily need treatment, and it's just part of being a woman, and, you know, you don't need to speak to your doctor about it and things like that. And I think as the generations change, that's changing as well, that it is something that you can openly talk to and find out information about.
One of the things I've just realised as we're talking, we've flipped a bit into nursing mode, which is not okay.
We do that sometimes.
You and I have talked about a lot that we want to make this as understandable as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're listening to some amazing podcasts.
Yeah.
But if we weren't nurses, we would have switched off. And there are even words in some of it that we had to go, oh, have you ever heard that word?
No, we did have to do some Googling to work some things
out.
Well,
I suppose perimenopause means that it's coming before you actually go through menopause, and it's when most of the symptoms come out.
Yep.
So you're classed as a menopausal woman if you haven't had a period for over a year.
And how does that equate if you have had a hysterectomy, for example? Where do they put that into
the... They don't. I have no idea, and they have no idea.
Okay.
And that's the thing. For something that happens to so many women, there is hardly any information out there.
Yeah.
And one of the podcasts we're listening to from two amazing doctors and a professor, which we'll talk about in a second, they were talking about, and I never thought about it like this. There is no doctor that specialises in this, as in there is no field. Like, a gynaecologist specialises in reproductive organs. It's not just about your reproductive organs, which we're going to get onto in a second. A GP has so many hats on.
Yeah.
So, and you're not going to go to an obstetrician because you're not having a baby. And so who do you go to? And if you look at the training in obstetrics and gynecology, which is doctors who look at your vagina and your uterus and your ovaries, they have the smallest, tiniest amount on menopause. And GPs have to have so many hats. And I think they only have it in their post-training if they choose to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's a lot of GPs now who are choosing to do it, which we need more of. And so who do you go to? It's really hard. Cool. Yeah. You and I have been so lucky.
Mm. We had different paths as well, didn't we? So my GP was very good and she felt quite confident in managing me. You needed to seek out someone who did specialise.
Because I didn't have a GP who was up on this sort of stuff. Yeah. But we're quite assertive.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is give women the tools to say the symptoms that they're feeling are not okay.
Yeah.
And so I do think we need a women's health specialty doctor and we need women's health specialty nurses. So it's absolutely something that doesn't exist at the moment.
Yeah.
And so I think it's something that we should be pushing.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things that we wanted to talk about today is the fact that when you think about menopause, and if we're talking about menopause and even in the nursing field and the medical field, it's about reproductive organs.
Yeah.
It's about you don't have a period, as I just said. Yeah. That's how it's defined.
Yeah.
You know, you get vaginal dryness or you get painful sex because of vaginal dryness. There's all these things, but it's all around reproduction. But if you look at estrogen, I was blown away. Like I knew, especially from a muscle point of view and a bone point of view, that our bones and muscles need estrogen.
Yeah.
So that's why we have osteoporosis. More women have more incidence of osteoporosis because we don't have estrogen.
Yeah. Do we want to define what osteoporosis
is? Yeah, it's fragile bones.
Yep.
It's it looks like honeycomb in your bone. So, you know, you hear about women breaking their hips.
And having risks and, of increased risk with falling.
Yeah, and things like that. And I've lost my train of thought. There you go, there's menopause. Even on hormone replacement, it goes away. What was I talking about?
No point asking me. I have the same symptoms that you do.
I'd like to say it's not the wine. It's actually this is what we're like nowadays.
Is it a good time to be talking about some of those symptoms? Because I guess you're talking about osteoporosis.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
So the muscle, you know, lack of, if you don't have estrogen, your muscles don't fire as well. They don't heal as well. That's why when you have a baby and you breastfeed, your estrogen levels are really low. So you'll hear women talk about, I stopped breastfeeding and everything tightened up. It didn't tighten up. You just got your hormone levels back and your muscles fired better. And it's the same with your brain, which we were both listening to some stuff today about it. And I knew that estrogen crossed the blood-brain barrier, which means that your brain has receptors in it that estrogen affects, but it's not called estrogen. Okay, who's going to say it? It's called estradiol?
Yep.
Estradiol. We practiced beforehand. But it is so interesting what not having estrogen or estradiol, I'm not even going there.
You just go estrogen.
Does to your brain.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of what certainly the symptoms I were having was, you know, that memory fog and just not being able to remember things. I feel like I was struggling to remember and people's faces. I'd look at someone and go, do I know that person? And names and, you know, just, like anxiety, feeling very stressed in situations, very tense in situations that normally I wouldn't have. And, you know, that's what when estrogen does, you know, go into our brain, it helps, it protects our brain and it helps with our memory. And if we're learning new things and have clear thinking, remembering things and emotion, and I think we both very much felt that. I certainly had very, like a roller coaster of emotions. I was, you know, would get very emotional about things that weren't particularly severe. And other times I didn't feel like I had a lot of emotion about things and incredibly irritable and angry, which
that was me.
You're probably worse than me on that. But I just, this irritation of everything, every little thing. And I knew that that wasn't what I was like normally. And you are not normally angry like that as you were. But, you know, until you read and we've learnt some of this stuff about that estrogen and how the impact it has on your brain and those mental health. You know, if you're someone who has depression or has anxiety, can potentially, doesn't do it for everybody, but affects people differently, but it can make those symptoms worse. And I think that was something that I hadn't put together, like the not sleeping well, which I didn't have an issue with, but I know you certainly
did. See, I've never slept well.
Yeah.
And so
do you think it was made worse though?
I probably do. I think it was made worse. Yeah. But my big thing was rage and the brain fog. So
you can tell them the story about your calming fluid.
I told the story in the last
podcast. Oh, did you? Okay,
so
that's all right.
If you want to
hear
my story about calm, which is I was trying desperately to stay calm because I could feel the rage and I stupidly, well, not stupidly, I think it was actually one of the best things I did.
Yeah.
Even though it was, how much was it? It was $50.
It was quite expensive. It was so expensive. Small bottle of Calm.
I bought this bottle of Calm that was supposed to help with menopausal symptoms. They didn't say rage.
No.
Mine was pure rage though, wasn't it?
And I was that like, might be a different bottle of fluid.
I'm going to try this, you know. I know it's not going to work, but I'm going to try it. I'm really going to try it because I was desperate.
And I think that shows that you were, you know, you were willing to try anything to get some relief from the symptoms.
But if you have listened to the first podcast, Katie was the poor person who had to do it with me. So she'd come over for a meeting about one of our projects. And I'm like, we're not drinking wine tonight. You are drinking Calm with me. And she's like, wine.
And I was rather disappointed by that. Yeah, but I thought the alcohol was calming.
And so we both had it and we went, no. And anyway, my husband ended up trying to drink it to try and stay calm because I was so agitated. So, but I am very black and white in certain things. And I normally would never try that, would I? You know, me for years and years. And so for me to buy that shows how desperate I was. Yep. And like I was looking at clients that I had been seeing for like 14 years, really, you know, knowing them really, really well and going, I can't remember your name and having to walk back to the computer really casually and go, okay, hi, blah, blah. Yeah. And, you know, that is not me because I, one of the things I have is dyslexia and ADHD. And so I keep everything in my mind and I don't have a diary because I don't look at it. Like I've got a PA who puts stuff in my diary and I don't look at it. She has to tell me because I'm very much rely on my memory. And so when my memory started to fail and I couldn't think of things, I was just, that's where the rage came from because that is my best asset, my memory and being able to access my mind.
Yeah.
And I did not know that that was a menopausal thing.
Mm.
Like I do remember my mother when she went through menopause being very angry. I remember locking myself, I hated school. Me doing a PhD now, but I hated it. I remember locking myself in my bedroom doing homework because she was so angry. So, you know, I probably followed my mum's journey from that. Yeah. She did go on hormone replacement because it was in the 80s. But then, you know, there was the big block on hormone replacement, which we'll talk about in a second. Yep. But I was just devastated that my brain was affected and I knew that it could have been menopause, but I didn't realise until I went on hormone replacement. And in saying that, we're not telling every woman to go on hormone replacement.
No.
That is not what we're saying. We're saying that there is an option there. But I went on hormone replacement and it was so quick with me.
Yeah.
Like within
I was the same
a day or two, I started.
I was probably about a week, I reckon, but I certainly noticed that the fog, the brain fog was the biggest thing for me. And prior to that, I'd really, particularly, I guess, around work things, I just felt like I'd felt so overwhelmed. I felt like I had so much on and I couldn't see how to get through it all. Like I just felt like I was sort of staring in empty space going, I don't quite know where to start. And I put that down to just being busy and, you know, I had a lot on the plate, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the difference now is like incomparable. Like,
yeah, it's phenomenal.
I still forget things, but
and we still have a few word issues, which you've heard today.
Well, yes,
but I don't.
And I did go to an appointment 6 hours early the other day. But, you know, that's
I didn't know she didn't tell me about that. I've got that to tease her
better
about.
Than 6 hours late.
But so there's this great. There's lots and lots of great doctors who are looking into this, and there's a great doctor in the UK, Dr. Louise Newsom.
Yes.
And she has some really interesting podcasts.
Yeah.
Some of them are a bit technical, but she's got an amazing app called Balance. And I downloaded it the other day. And everything is explained. It's free.
Yes.
Like there are, as with every app, there are purchasable
components
parts
that you
to
can
it.
Buy.
But the free bit is amazing. And you can document your sleep. You can document your mood. You can document your anger. there's a whole heap of things you can document. But she also has very, very basic descriptions of, like one of the things that you have is itchiness.
Yes.
And skin crawling. And I don't have it, so I'd never really read about it. And we were reading about it off her app today. Yeah. And it was so, like it was I hate the word aha moment, but it was one of those aha moments for me when I read about, because I look at, we've both nursed for a very long time, and you look at older women's skin. And they get tears really easily, which when we're talking about tears is they just walk past something and tap their skin and their skin like kind of rolls up like a bit of paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, estrogen helps with collagen. You lose 30% of your collagen when you have low estrogen. And so it's going to make your skin more paper thin and rough and dry. And, you know, like, I was like, oh, my God, how did I not know this?
Mm. Yeah, no, it's very eye-opening, a lot of these things. The other thing she was really talking about was how a lot of people get told, you know, just go and exercise. Go and do some exercise and it'll make you feel better. And she was saying, you know, to talk to someone who, you know, is feeling very demotivated and struggling, has joint issues, you know, they're low stamina, they've, you know, got increased sugar cravings because their hormone levels are low. People are going to struggle if you're saying to them, go and do exercise now, because you're battling against all those symptoms. And I thought that was really interesting, because that is a common thing, you know, if you go to your GP and you say, you know, I'm tired, I feel fatigued, I'm struggling, I want to eat sugar all the time and just got no motivation to do anything, and go for a walk, go and do some exercise. And she did say that it does help, but you've got to have that, be in that right headspace to be able to do it.
Yeah. Well, I look at my friend who's really struggling. She's had 4 blood tests, and if you listen to our first podcast, you cannot diagnose menopause via a blood test, because with you, when you had your blood test, but you weren't having a blood test to diagnose menopause.
My blood tests were done just as a guide, but my estrogen level wasn't particularly low, but I had the symptoms. Yeah. So I was given a checklist of symptoms, which was one I was talking about before, which I was very surprised at some of the symptoms that I hadn't put down that were perimenopausal. Yeah. And, you know, my treatment was based off those symptoms.
Yeah. Which is what it should be. Yeah. And that's what Rhea said. For anyone who hasn't listened to us, is our medical director. And when I was telling her that my poor friend has been to 4 doctors, they've done 4 blood tests and they've said she's not menopausal, even though she hasn't had a period for how many months, and she's got the brain fog and she's got every symptom you could imagine. I was like, no, they can't do that. And I'm like, well, they are. And in saying that, we're not bashing the medical community.
No,
because there
not.
Is no education out there. And you and I have had really, really good experiences.
Yeah.
But one thing I would say as a woman, you need to be your own advocate, or if you can't, you need to take someone who can with you.
Yeah. And, you know, just saying that potentially, you know, could I possibly be menopausal?
Well, she has done that, because I've been on the phone going, go and tell them this.
Yeah. Okay.
She just doesn't have the assertiveness. So what we've done is we're sending her to a women's health clinic, hopefully in Melbourne. That does not mean all of Melbourne is like that.
No.
So these podcasts and Dr. Newson's website, she's a GP in the UK who specialises in menopause. She did an interview with an amazing professor of psychology.
Yeah.
Psychology?
No.
Yes. Psychiatrist.
Professor. She's a psychiatrist,
From Melbourne, who was really interesting.
It was amazing.
And you're going to say her name. Professor
Kulkarni.
Yeah, Professor Kulkarni. I just wanted Katie to say it first, so I didn't say it wrong. And,
thanks, Peter.
You know, some of the stuff they were talking about was just horrific as a woman and as a nurse to listen to. And it seems that the rage that I felt is not commonly associated with menopause, which I found really interesting.
Yeah.
And they were saying that a lot of women have the rage one day, which is what I was like, and then we're a bit calmer the next day. And so women are being diagnosed with bipolar.
Oh, okay.
Because they're seeing the rage and then it's gone. So they're two different women.
Right, yeah.
You know, the rage is still there. It's just compartmentalised now and it doesn't come out. It comes out more controlled.
Yes.
Yeah. But, so that's really, really disturbing. And there's all these statistics around the fact that women are being diagnosed with early dementia.
Yep.
Which
mental health conditions.
Yeah, mental health conditions, depression, which they probably do have depression, but it's elevated by lack of estrogen. Mm. And as you said, the suicide rate is highest in women during this period. Mm. And or high.
Yep.
And women from that article that we were reading from around business was that they retire earlier, they don't go for promotions because the brain fog and they don't think they're going to cope, they cut back to 3 days a week. So this is impacting financially everywhere. So they're not going to have as much super, they're not going to have as much money to live off, and they also think they're going crazy, because I thought I was going crazy.
Because that's what we were looking at, the article from the ABC, and they were saying, yeah, the average age for sort of starting your perimenopause is 51. So, and people don't tend to retire until they're, you know, sometimes early 60s, but people were retiring a lot earlier because of those symptoms. Yeah.
And nowadays, if you look at the financial side of stuff, people aren't going to retire till their 70s and 80s now. Mm. It's not like we can stop work at 65.
Yeah,
and what was
right.
it? Women used to be 60, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's gone now. Yeah. There's no requirement to retire at that age anymore. Mm. And so I think this is the first time that there's been so many more women in business or women in working positions. Mm. And so the brain fog is really, really affecting them.
Yeah. Well, they were saying 80% of women will suffer from the signs and symptoms of the menopause, and one in four, it affects their ability to work. And that's massive. Like, that is really...
I actually think it's
really
probably more than one in
that.
Four because it was affecting my ability, but I was just
moving
on.
Just, yeah.
So we didn't... Same with you. It was affecting you, but we just got on with it.
Yes.
Not saying that that's the right thing to do, but I just think... I was talking to one of our clients who's a human resource manager and she was like, yeah, we can see it. It's the biggest thing we see at that age bracket in women, that their level of efficiency, their level of output just drops and then their confidence goes and it's just huge.
And that was one thing I really noticed. It was a confidence thing. Like I prior to that, hadn't really thought about it. I did my job. I did everything I needed to do, but I suddenly had this real concern and lack of confidence in my ability to what I was doing. Yeah. And that takes a while to get back. Like, I don't feel like I'm back to where I was with that, even though I've started treatment. But I think people are concerned about, they're worried about starting treatment. And I wonder if, you know, if that stops some people wanting to go and talk to people, talking to someone about those symptoms they're having.
Well, that was one of the things we were going to talk about.
Yes.
The older generation. No, listen, we're the older generation now.
We are the older generation now, probably, yes.
The generation above us had quite a, like your mum had quite a severe reaction to saying that you said that you were going on hormone replacement, because in the early 2000s there was that research project. It wasn't a project. It was a full research. And it was on breast cancer and hormone replacement.
Yes.
And it has been debunked since.
Yes.
But the long-term effects of it have not been debunked. And so not everyone, but I've had lots of, oh, aren't you worried about getting breast cancer now and heart disease? And there's lots of things. But as Dr. Newson was talking about, she was saying, if you go on estrogen replacement or hormone therapy, so it's not just estrogen replacement. That's one thing we should say.
Yes.
So you... I've had a hysterectomy, so
I only needed to go on estrogen replacement.
Well, I haven't had a hysterectomy, so I'm on progesterone too.
Yeah.
So that regulates my periods, but in saying that, for the first 2 months I didn't get a period and now it started again. She was saying that if you go on hormone replacement, and I could see it especially in the first week, it's pretty much out of your system within a day.
Yeah.
Like if you stop it, it's gone, you know, like... So it's not a high-risk treatment if you are going to go on it. But I think there is a stigma attached to it and it means you're getting older, and we, you know, and when we've looked at lots of research on aging and we've interviewed people and we've done focus groups and the way women are perceived as they age, even in that podcast, it was interesting. Both of them were talking about how it's not the sexiest profession because who wants to look into middle-aged women, and I'm like, well, I don't actually
think when they're angry.
Middle-aged. So it's just, I think, I never ever thought there would be a taboo around this.
No, and she had a very good point that the risks of not taking hormone replacement therapy probably outweigh the risks of it.
Yeah.
And my GP was very good and went through all the details of it, and they do have research, you know, sort of after a 10-year period, and that's kind of their recommendation time. But it actually helped with a lot of things. Like, it helped prevent osteoporosis. You know, there isn't that risk of cancer that, or a low risk of the breast cancer that was this big thing that people were talking about. So, I think that was very interesting when she was going through this. I'm like, it's actually, there's more benefit to take it than to not take it.
And from a continence point of view, we're both continence nurses, it makes a massive difference.
Yes.
So without estrogen, your pelvic floor
does not
affect, it's not as effective. Mm. So I was noticing that everything was not working as well.
Yeah.
Like I was feeling boggy and uncomfortable. And when I've, since I've gone on the estrogen replacement, it has helped, or the hormone replacement. Yeah. So Katie and I both use very different forms.
Yes.
So I use gel, which I wipe on my arm every morning. So
that's probably why you don't have dry skin.
Yeah, I know. It's actually probably the best my skin's been. So I do a pump in my hand and wipe it on my both arms. So a pump in each hand. I started with one pump, but you're on the transdermal patch.
Yep. So I have a patch that I change twice a week.
Yeah. So basically it's just a sticky that you stick to yourself. Yep. Now the reason I chose to go on the gel is because I'm allergic to tape.
Yes.
So that was the only reason that I went down that track. But there's also oral tablets as well. So there are so many
different options. Yeah.
So there is no one thing is right.
And different options suit different people. So
yeah, and so if I gave myself three squirts, it would affect me differently.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's titrated, like, which means it goes, you can make it go up and down like any medication.
Yes.
So I think that the other thing I wanted to talk about is the expense of it.
Yes.
And I was shocked, actually, that I had said in the last podcast that I thought it was very expensive, $60 a month.
Yes.
And someone said to me, $60 isn't much. And if you're on a healthcare card, you get it for cheaper. And I'm like, yes, but there's a whole percentage of women who aren't on healthcare cards.
Yep.
Who are just managing.
Mm.
And then to put an extra $60 on their monthly bills, especially at the moment.
And like, say for me, for example, that has arthritis, I already take quite a few medications for that already. So that is that extra.
Yeah.
And it's worth it, but it is a bit of an extra expense on top of that.
So I do think that it's something that as women and as a society that we should be pushing for it to be not as expensive or free, to be honest. Because if we're looking at the financial impacts, it's massive.
And I was amazed at those articles that had only come out very recently and how they did, like there was a lot of talk about that impact.
Yeah, so in the workplace, it's a hard thing to handle.
Yes.
Because you can't be rageful or angry when you're dealing with the public or your work colleagues.
Mm.
So there's that extra mental stress of, I can't do this, I can't do this, I have to keep it together. Mm. You can't be, well, you can be running off to the toilet every 10 minutes, but then that puts an extra stress on you. So all of these symptoms put extra stresses on you, and then it's just going to compound. And so I think workplaces need to be really aware of it too and offer support.
Yes.
And there are lots of ways. Like, I remember hearing my friend who works at a university on the mainland, and she asked for a fan because of her hot flushes. And her hot flushes are hideous because she's on tamoxifen.
Right.
And for those of you who don't know what tamoxifen is, it's a long-term low-dose chemotherapy, isn't it?
Yes.
Is it a chemotherapy?
I think so.
Yeah, that you take after having breast cancer.
Right.
And you take it from 5 years, and some women are taking it up to 10 years, but it makes menopausal symptoms a lot more severe.
Yep.
So she'll be talking to you and then she'll just go bright red, like bright red, and like sweat like she's just in a sauna. Like you can see it dripping off her, and she gets things and fans herself. And so she asked for a fan, and they were like, oh, no, it's against work health and safety policy to have a fan in the office. And it's like, why? That's ridiculous. You can find one that you get checked and tested. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, making it more difficult for women.
Yeah.
She's, you know, she's a really effective person. And why are you willing to, like, not give her that little bit of extra help in the office, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's, that needs to change. I think there needs to be more of a education and acknowledgement about it, and for women to be able to say, yes, this would make it better. And I think that's the thing. If you know, you're going and talking to your doctor, you may choose not to go on hormone replacement therapy. I think knowing what your condition is, like if that's what is going on, makes a big difference, and that then you can kind of start to manage it. Because people do, you know, they're suddenly, like you're saying, with, you know, possibly people thinking they've got early onset dementia, or, you know, thinking there's something wrong going on. So, you know, having that diagnosis of it, I think, is a big factor. And then people can choose what they want to do. Do they want to get some treatment? Do they want to try other things? You know, but you kind of know what you're dealing with. And I think that gives a lot of people sort of comfort in that aspect as well.
And there are some conditions that you can't go on hormone replacement for.
Yeah.
But there are other things, like if you look at some of the menopause societies, the Australian Menopause Society's website, they talk about if you have had breast cancer, there are other things you can
options,
do.
Yeah.
There are options.
Yeah.
You know, eating makes a difference. Like one of the other big things I got was massive reflux. It was terrible. I've never had anything like that before. You know how much we love cheese at my house? I'm married to a Dutchman, so it's kind of like you have to have it. I was really struggling with cheese, which is my joy.
And it's interesting. It's amazing the different symptoms that we had.
I know.
Yeah.
I had that. I was listening to the other podcast and they were talking about a woman who thought she had nits.
Oh, yeah, so I'm doing a nit treatment.
Yeah. Because my kids are young enough to have nits and they seem to be having them a lot. And I kept itching going, I've got nits. I've got to have nits.
Oh, everyone's I feel like I've got a spider or something.
Yeah,
my leg
everyone's got to be treated for nits.
Funny feeling in my
So I think
face.
Everyone in our house was probably over-treated for nits. And I've just realised.
You won't have nits for a long time. Yeah.
It's probably not a nit thing. And I've got a child with very curly hair. Yeah. So it's very painful. Yeah. But yeah, there is just like the point of this podcast, though, was not to go through menopause symptoms. It was to talk about the impact on our mental health and how shocked we both were.
And how it impacts on your quality of life. Like it makes a massive difference.
Yes, and I'm very, very, I'm not lucky. He's lucky, but I'm lucky that my husband is not medical, but when I was like, I don't know why this is happening, but then I explained it when I found out he was really cool about it.
Yeah.
He gave me space and understood, and that's why he started drinking the calm. The
so
wine
wasn't,
and beer wasn't
wasted
working,
$50.
It was the calm. No, he drank it all, which is like, I think, he's also Dutch, so when I told him it was $50, I think he's like, I'm going to drink this. But he said it tasted like cordial from his childhood.
Yep.
So there are some complementary therapies that will help. But not always.
No.
And so.
And you might have to try a couple of things.
It's not get it right every time. Okay, so we've talked about mental health or our mental health and how much it impacted us. So there, you shouldn't live with it. You should go and try and seek help. There are lots of ways you can seek help. You've got the GP plan. What's that called? The
Mental health plan. Yep.
And I think it's 5 to 10, I think it's just increased to 10 this year, 10 visits. Anyway, you go to your GP and you can be referred to a psychologist or it's very hard to get into a psychiatrist.
And I don't think it's you know, I think sometimes when people hear that, they feel like there's a stigma attached to it, but it's really about getting support.
Yeah.
So it just gives you those options of, you know, yes, I'm dealing with anxiety or I'm dealing with depression. Where can I go and getting that support? So it's not an attachment, you know, there's not a stigma attached to it. It's to get you the right help.
Mm. The other great place is Headspace.
Yes.
And even if you can't get into Headspace because it's a non-for-profit and they are very busy, they've got amazing apps that you can download.
Yep.
The app that we were talking about from Louise Newson.
Yes.
She's got a whole section on charting your emotions and charting your feelings and which can help sometimes when you look back and review it.
And particularly when you go and see someone, like you can go, well, you know, this is how I've been feeling it. Sometimes it's hard to sort of blurt that all out when you're seeing someone. So that documentation.
I do think your GP is your first.
Yeah.
You know.
And there are women's health clinics.
Yeah, totally. In most cities. We've got a new one down here called The Bubble.
Yep.
In Tasmania. It's been in Launceston for a while. It's just come down to Hobart and it's seven, I think it's seven. I could be lying, but it's a group of GPs who specialise in women's health.
Right.
So they do menopause, periods, babies, you know,
the works.
Postnatal, the works. So I think they're a really good option. I think GP is your first option, really. But there's the helplines too.
Yes.
Like there's always Lifeline. Which you can always use, which we'll put all these numbers in the
absolutely
show notes. Yeah. But
and it's important to reach out if you're needing help.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you feel very alone in these circumstances. And as we've said, there's a lot of probably someone around you who's experiencing the similar things.
Yeah.
So it's important to reach out if you're needing help.
We have worked as a group of three on this, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So as girlfriends,
and we've supported each other and pushed each other. And we've really, it's been an amazing to have that support of someone who's going through the same thing and, you know, is able to, I guess, help you when you're needing it.
And fill in our words.
Yes.
Having conversations and filling in words and laughing about the horrible things that we feel that we're going through.
Yeah, and it normalises a little bit. It makes it feel like you're not the only person in the world experiencing it, where sometimes it can feel very isolating. So even though we don't want our friends to be feeling it. Everyone is, you know, going to go through it in some format, so it's nice to have that.
And I also think talking about it, like I talk about it at work all the time, that's normalising it for a younger generation.
Yes.
You know, not putting a stigma on it, me going, I'm perimenopausal and this is what's happening and now I've got this sorted, I'm feeling so much better and I want everyone to have the ability to feel better because...
And my adult daughter actually came to my doctor's appointment purely by fluke because she had one at the same time. And I think she was quite surprised at it and at what I'd been feeling. But it was good because it initiated that conversation of, you know, this is what we're going to do and this is, you know, and for her to ask questions. And I think that's very, at that young age, is very empowering so that it's not some scary thing down the track that they're going to experience.
So both my daughters are fully aware of it because I'm so open about everything.
They deal with us all the time.
Yeah,
so.
And they're like 10 and 12 and they're like, yeah, you're menopausal, Mum. Yeah. And I'm like, yes, I am, but you will be there one day. And so learning from me is a great thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully, it's going to become a field of medicine that is a lot more developed because, you know, I don't want my girls to go through what we've been through. No. I want it to be picked up a lot earlier.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I suffered very long. I probably suffered for 4 months, 3 months.
Yeah, probably maybe 4 or 5. Yeah. Our friend, funny when you look back, you think, oh, certain things. I think, oh, maybe that was, but
the start of it.
It's hard to.
Our friend was in there right away.
Yeah, she was all
She was like, nah, I'm not losing my collagen. I'm making sure my sex life is amazing. I am not going down this track. And so, so she pushed us, which was great. So you've always got to have different people who push you in different ways.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I find really interesting is, like, lots of women don't actually know what the symptoms are. So they don't know they're going through it.
No.
They just think it's what happens when we get older.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was for some of those symptoms, I was very much in that.
Yeah.
Category is that I was going, oh, wow, that's, wouldn't have put that in that menopause box at all. Mm.
So we have some great resources in Australia.
Yes.
The Menopause Society.
Yes.
The GP Society has some stuff up on it.
Yep.
There's lots of different GPs who are setting up. They're not quite there the way they are in the UK. The UK have menopause clinics, are great.
Right.
Like you go in. The doctor I saw down here only sees women who think they're going through menopause or who are going through menopause and she doesn't manage your other issues. She coordinates with your doctor.
And I think that's a really good thing too because I know some people may feel, you know, like I've got my GP, I feel like I'm
cheating on them.
almost going to someone else. But I think that's really important that they work well together. And I know certainly, you know, having a chronic health condition, I have multiple doctors that all, you know, you see for different aspects that all work well together. But, yes, people shouldn't be put off thinking, oh, I've got to stay with that.
No.
You know.
And especially if there's your
someone
doctor
who specialises in it.
Doesn't understand.
Yeah,
it's not. I'm not saying they don't understand.
No.
But your GP has to wear so many hats.
Oh, 100%.
And menopause may not be one of them.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that you take control of your health and be assertive and say, I don't want to go through this. I just want to get it checked.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I just want to thank everyone for listening because this is something really dear to my heart.
Yeah, absolutely. I very much agree with that.
And I wish that I had known this before it had started because I was really lost. Even as a nurse, I was like, I had no clue.
Yeah.
So I really hope that listeners can get something out of this or if they know someone who is going through perimenopause, even if they maybe don't know, get them to listen to this. So I just wanted to talk about the fact that we are so lucky to have so many amazing health professionals in this.
Yes.
You know, the doctors, the nurses, the allied health staff and everything that we do goes through a clinical governance committee, which for those of you who don't know means that a group of medical professionals, including nurses and doctors, check all the information we're giving out to make sure that we're giving you out something that is accurate. Now, in this field, since I've been going through menopause, and as soon as you hear about menopause, the amount of junk that comes up on your social media. So I just think it's really important to make sure the information that you're using is accurate and comes from a really reliable source. And that's what WEN is trying to do.
Yeah. And we want to give it from our personal perspective as well as that professional, you know, side of people that are checking it and making sure that we're getting all that.
So for once it's us, that, you know, but
like well, we've done a bit of both.
We always try, no, we don't try, we always look at the people who it's happening to and discuss it with them first as well.
Yeah.
All of the stuff we talked about, there will be links in the show notes.
Yes.
And if you want to contact us with any questions, or even if you want more information on a certain part of menopause or any other women's health topic,
yes,
you can contact us via our website, which is www.whenwen.org.au, or you can email us directly on info@wen.org.au. We've got heaps of very exciting podcasts coming up. Well, I think they're exciting.
What are they about, Peter?
So one of my babies that we're yes. going to be doing is diastasis. So for those of you who aren't aware what a diastasis just literally means separation. And yep. we're going to talk about the separation of stomach muscles. That is generally related to just pregnancy, but it's not. Women have it for years and years after pregnancy. You can have it from exercising incorrectly. Yep. And so we're hoping that Rhea and I can do a podcast on that in the next couple of weeks.
That'll be excellent. So many people will have that and aren't even aware or not aware what to do about it. So
or if they are aware of it, there's a huge...
There's a lot of information out there and not all of it's correct.
No, so I think we're really excited about that.
Awesome.
We've got our Trans Women Pelvic Floor podcast coming out very soon.
Yes.
So Katie's working on that with me.
Yep, that's all in motion at the moment.
Really exciting and interesting new stuff for us.
Yep.
We've done the Trans Men podcast, which is fantastic.
Yep.
And it's been taken really, really well.
Yep.
We are looking at also doing a pelvic floor in the postnatal phase, which is after you've had a baby.
Yes.
Looking at what's happening with your pelvic floor. So I'm hoping Kate, one of our other nurses, and I will be doing that. So we've got lots of stuff coming up.
Yes.
So it's really exciting. But we do want to thank the listeners because it's really important to us that we get this information to women and we give them the power to know what they're doing and make their own decisions.
Yep. And it's worthwhile following the WEN on social medias as well because there's lots of information comes out on there too and little tidbits of what's going on.
Yes.
So that's really good.
So thank you, Katie. Katie will be back. Oh, I forgot to say, I haven't told Katie this yet. She's going to do a podcast with me on rheumatoid arthritis.
Excellent. Oh, well, I'm an expert on that.
So we have got quite a few podcasts coming out and they're all about women's health and we'd really love you to join us.
I'll certainly be there and hopefully everyone else joins us too.